Now, we're holding on Minhei Omidbey's 10 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about the case of Gluda, an animal whose skin was peeled off, whether by disease, whether by overwork, whether whatever it is. And we talked about, is it kosher or not? First, we had said that in the Mishnah, that in the Mishnah, the mayor had said that it's kosher. And the Chum said that it's possible, that it's trefa. We said the mayor changed his mind. And then we discussed that if there's certain areas on the body where there's enough skin left, then it's okay. So now the Gemara continues in this vein. Throughout the whole body of an animal that was gluder, where the skin was peeled off, anywhere where you have skin that's left, as long as you have, as we learned yesterday, a seller's size of skin, then it saves an animal that's gluder from becoming trefa. Because again, like we learned yesterday, once you have a seller's size of intact skin, then eventually it'll regenerate. With the exception of the skin in the area of the hooves. So the lower part of the we'll learn in more detail in the next parak, Beis Hashem, when we talk about the Tzemes HaGidin and all that. An animal's leg, unlike a person's leg, is made up of three major segments. The lowest segment actually corresponds more or less to our palm of the hand or sole of the foot. And then below that, you have the fingers or toes and the fingernails or toenails. A kosher animal has split hooves, which correspond to the nails. So basically a kosher animal in effect walks on its fingertips. So now the lowest part of the lowest part of the leg, which corresponds to our palm of the hand and sole of the foot, the skin on there doesn't count as far as regenerating for the rest of the body, because as we're going to be discussing in these next few lines, it's soft. There's two different views. So it actually says rach. It's soft, as we're going to see seen in the Gemara. To a certain extent, it counts even like flesh rather than like skin for certain areas of halacha. There's a different gersa. The Beis Yosef has the rach, which means that it's thin, it's thinner than the skin and the rest of the body, and therefore it's not going to help regenerate. So that's one opinion. Rabbi Yochanan says even the skin in that area, if there's a cell of it left, then it will also help save the animal from being trefa. So in this connection, Rabbi Yochanan, this very question, the skin in the area of the hooves, that lowest segment of the leg, if it's still intact and skin on the rest of the body has been peeled off, would it save it from being trained? Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says, matzel, yes, it would save. Amalei, so but Rabbi Asi says, why should it? Limatonu Rabbeinu, Rebbe, you taught us, which is actually in submission later on in our Masechta. So it's not like a Braisa or something that Rabbi Yochanan came up with on his own in the Beis Medrash. This is something that was in the Mishnayos that everybody was learning, but of course Rabbi Asi, being Rabbi Yochanan's Talmud, is going to speak respectfully that Rabbi Yochanan, you taught us. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to have a perek for Ha'olva Ha'roitiv, which deals with matters of Tumah V'Tahara. We're going to be discussing various details of the flesh and the skin and various other parts of the animal as far as the dinim of being metabol Tumah or not. And there's a Mishnah there that says, Eilu Shor Rasein Kibsaron, the following cases, the skin is considered like the flesh, meaning that usually you say the skin is distinct from the flesh. The skin is not edible, and therefore it's not metabol Tumah. Or it's not makabel truma. It's not makabel truma srichlum. Let's put it that way. Skin, leather can be makabel truma as a keli, but as food, it's not going to be makabel truma because it's not edible. But then the Mishnah says there are certain kinds of skins that are soft and edible, similar to the flesh, and therefore they have the dinim of the flesh as far as truma v'tahara. And one of them is, it gives a whole list over there, and one of them is erbeis hapyrosis, the skin on the lower parts of the legs. So in effect, in other words, that's considered like flesh, not like skin. So what are you telling us, Rabbi Yochanan, that if there's skin left over there, then it saves the animal from being trefa? Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, Al taknitani, don't upset me, and don't try to ask from this Mishnah, shebaloshin yochin ani shona oisa, because I learned that Mishnah is loshin yochin, meaning Rabbi Yochanan holds that Mishnah is only a point of Shimon, and not the point of the Chachamim. So, since it's only a coincidence of Shimon, then the halacha wouldn't be like him if it's only a das yachid. Tosfos explains it's not even that Rabbi Yochanan. It's not just that Rabbi Yochanan holds that Mishnah is like Rabbi Shimon. It's actually that he actually had a version of the Mishnah that actually said explicitly that detail about the Sfor Beis HaParosis is divrei Rabbi Shimon. Otherwise, Tosfos says the very fact that Rabbi Yochanan says that it's Rabbi Yochanan's opinion Rabbi Shimon's opinion wouldn't be enough to make the halacha not be like it. The fact is, it would be taught as a stam mishnah, and we have a usual rule: the halacha is like a stam mishnah, even if the Gemara shows that stam mishnah is only according to one opinion. But here, Tosfos says Rabbi Yochanan actually had a gusa in his mishnah that actually explicitly said divrei Rabbi Shimon, and in that case, that implies the halacha is not like it. How do I know that? Says Rabbi Yochanan. Ditanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Hashoshakasa Ola, person that we talked about in Zvachim and in Menachas, the whole concept of Pigul, the whole concept of Machshava's Mokim that makes a Korban fossil, or Machshava's Zman having in mind to eat or burn parts of the Korban outside the proper time, which makes a Pigul. So now, Braisa says, Hashoshakasa Ola, person shats an Ola, Lahakta Kazayis Ma'osha Tachas Ahalya, and he has in mind that he's going to burn a kezias for more of the skin on the underside of a tear. Now that's another one of those skins that's mentioned later in our Masechta as being soft and fairly edible. So therefore, now this is considered like flesh of the animal. So now you have the usual rules. If he has in mind that he's going to burn it outside the azara, fossil, then that makes the korban fossil, the by koris, but there's no koris because there's no koris for eating that type of fossil. It's only that the korban itself is fossil. The owner is not yours saying we take the korban and we burn it. But if he has in mind that he's going to eat this kezias of this skin on the underside of the tail, outside the time, in the case of an oilo, there's no time for eating it anyhow, an oilo is supposed to be burnt, but in other words, if he has in mind to do it the next day, pigul, v'chayov another chorus, then the korban is going to be pigul, and a person is chayiv chorus for eating it. So now the point, in other words, the point is that usually we would say, this would apply only to an oilo, because, with other kinds of korbanos, you anyway skin them before you offer them, and you don't offer the skin on the mizbeach, so the skin wouldn't be considered, even the soft parts of the skin wouldn't be considered parts that are supposed to go on the mizbeach. If the oila, where the whole thing goes on the mizbeach, then this skin would be included. Now, the Braisa, so that's one opinion of the Braisa. But then the Braisa continues. Eliezer ben Yehuda, Ish Ivlim, Omar, the Shum Rabbi Yaakov. Eliezer ben Yehuda, from Ivlim, the name of a place, says in the name of Rabbi Yaakov, the Fein Hayur, Shim ben Yehuda, Ish Ikus, the Omer Shum Rabbi Shimon, and so also Rabbi Shim ben Yehuda, from Ikus, Ish Kfar Ikus, it says on the side, from the village of Ikus, said in the name of Rabbi Shimon, that it's more than that, not just that skin under the tail, but also Echad, Obeisa parasis, the same thing would apply to the skin on the lower part of the leg above the hooves. The echad ur harosh shel egel arach, and also the skin of the head, of a tender calf. We're going to learn that later on in the Masechta as well. In that perika ur harosh, we're going to talk about when you have a newborn calf, then the skin of its head is still considered soft. What the definition is, how long it's considered a newborn for that purpose, we'll learn later. Here, Rashi brings one opinion, which is as long as the animal is nursing. We're going to see, later on, a couple of months from now, Beis Hashem, that there's another opinion about that as well. Anyway, so that. Also the skin under the tail, which the Tanakhama had mentioned. And in fact, all the other cases which we have in that Mishnah later in the Masechta, where the Chachamim enumerated where skins are considered like flesh, and the Gemara interjects in the Braisa, that means that comes to include also the Mishnah mentions over there. The skin around the womb of the animal. It actually says base of boshes literally means the place of shame. So that in English you have the word pudenda for that part of the body, which also means the shameful place, and it's private parts. They're meant to be covered. It actually says it means base harechem shon kever. It means the womb. The Deferes Yisrael points out to me in the actual womb itself, that's an internal organ, of course it would be considered like flesh. What we mean is the skin of the area on the body outside, right right outside of that, the vaginal area. In any case, now that's the only other one you can include. All the other ones, the Mishnah mentions over there that are relevant to an Ola are all mentioned over here. Rashi points out then, so the Gneisa now did not mention Beis HaBoshes because he were focusing on an Ola. An Ola is always a male animal, so there is no Beis HaBoshes. For the same reason, Rashi says we don't mention over here HaShlil. The Mishnah also mentions over there the skin of the unborn baby found inside the womb. For the same reason, an Ola is a male animal, so there's no unborn baby found inside the womb. Tosfos explains somewhat differently. That we're listing only things that could apply to all korbanos. So the skin under the tail applies only to sheep. Only sheep have that kind of fat tail. But the point is, either it's edible by people, or it's burnt on the mizbeach, as the case may be, and therefore it's relevant to mention it. But we're not going to mention explicitly in the braisa the Beis HaBoshes and the HaShlil, because those are not relevant to all korbanos. So they're not so much because they're not relevant to an ola, but because there are certain korbanos, because some korbanos are males, and therefore it doesn't apply to them, and some are females, and it does. Be that as it may, so that whole list, so again, Eliezer ben Yehuda from Ish Ivlim says in the name of Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Shimon Yehuda from Kfar Ikus is saying in the name of Rabbi Shimon, this whole list, which includes the Beis HaParsis, it includes that skin on the lower parts of the legs, so all of those, they say, puts the McClain of Fossil Vein Vicardus, if a person has in mind to eat a kazayas of this outside the proper place, outside the Azara, Fossil Vein Vicardus, and the korban is fossil by that machshava, but there's no chorus for eating it. But if he has in mind, then the next day, or in the case of a shlomim, 2 days from now, then it'll be pigo and he's chayav paris. So we see that that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon hold of this concept that the Beis HaParsis, that the skin on the lower parts of the legs counts as flesh rather than skin. Therefore, the Mishnah later on in Amos Esther also follows that opinion in listing that among the ones that are saying to Sodom that as far as Tumah V'Tahara, the flesh is considered like the skin. Meanwhile, though, says that these kinds of skin are considered like flesh. Meanwhile, though, Rabbi Yehuda says, given that that's only the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, okay, and Rabbi Yaakov as well, and the other Chachamim disagree, then that means that no, that skin on the lower parts of the legs and all those other ones that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon have listed, with the exception of the skin under the alia, all of those, in fact, according to the Chachamim, against Rav Shimon and Rav Yaakov, are not considered like flesh, they're considered like skin, and therefore, if it's considered like skin, then that means, as far as our case over here, where you have intact skin there on the lower parts of the legs, then yes, as long as you have a cell our size, then it will help regenerate, and we're good. With that said, as far as halacha, though, it's not, as far as halacha, this doesn't really come up anyway, as it is, we learned yesterday that if the skin is missing in certain key areas on the body, along the spine, and in the area of the navel, and on the joints, then even if it's found on the rest of the body, the animal is nevertheless, we said, tefu, we have to leave it unresolved, and we said it's trei from isafik, so in that case, then this whole question about if you have a sella on the lower legs is not really going to be relevant anyhow, because it's not going to be relevant halacha, because in any case, whether you have skin over there is not the key factor, it's whether you have it in those key areas on the body that we learned yesterday. Okay. The Mishnah says, Ve'elu treifas v'oth. The following list of things are treifa in a bird. Now, most treifas that apply to animals also apply to birds. But here the Mishnah actually points out, the Mishnah is going to be listing ones where there's a chidush in a bird compared to an animal. Now, there are some of them that are not the same in the first place, because there are certain body parts that land animals have that birds do not. So we're not talking about, there are certain things where they're different. So we're not going to talk about, obviously, the things where the body parts are different. We're talking about where they have the same body parts, but in each, so for the most part, whatever treifas apply to an animal, apply to the corresponding body parts in a bird, but now we're going to mention in the Mishnah a list of things where there's a chiddush in each one of them. So, the Nekuvas HaDesh, the first one is where the windpipe has a hole. Now, that is identical to an animal. Opsukas agageras, or where the windpipe is cut, again, where there's a hole in the esophagus, the vesh is the esophagus, so you have a small hole in that. Opsukas agageras, or where the windpipe is cut. Now, those, we already learned by an animal. Rashi points out that, given that we learned earlier in the Masechta that you only need to shecht one simen by a bird, then you could think that maybe, with an animal, you could argue that it has more chayus, it has more strength and life force, and therefore you need only, and therefore when it comes particularly to the windpipe, you need a large hole in it, as we learned before, most of the circumference of it, or the size of an iser, depending whether there's something missing of it or not, for it to be traced. You could argue that a bird maybe even a small hole in the windpipe should be should make it safer, and therefore we need to say that not. So once we're mentioning the windpipe, we mention the esophagus too, also because they tend to go together. So that's the chiddush in those. Next, this one is new to birds. He can't hold the al-roisha if a weasel, a holder can be a weasel or a rat or various other kinds of rodents like that, struck it on its head. And specifically, it actually says struck it means bit it with its teeth, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara as far as the teeth. If it swiped its head with its paw, then we talked about before the whole matter of Jursa a few days ago, and then we have to figure out whether the animal is Jursa, whether the bird is Jursa, and we have to start doing a careful check to see whether there's any of this redness that shows that it was Jursa. But here we said over there that Jursa does not apply when the predator attacks with its teeth. But here we're saying, so usually if a predator bites an animal with its teeth, then it's not a problem unless it penetrates all the way in. But here you have the concern that because a bird's head is softer, that therefore the weasel's teeth may have broken through the membranes, the membranes, the meninges around the brain, and therefore that would make the bird traitorous. And we'll see in the Gemara how exactly we check for that. So he caught a hold al rosha, mokum shoisois a trefa, if it did it on the head in a place where it would make a trefa, namely the part of the head that contains the brain and that has the meninges of the brain surrounding it. In other words, as opposed to in the next Mishnah, in the next Mishnah on Omer Beis, we're going to talk about where it bites it on the head in an area where it's not in the area of the brain, and then you don't have a problem. Teres Chaim points out it's not only a weasel. The same thing would be if it was injured by a stone or something. On the other hand, the Noda Behuda says, you know what, maybe we're talking Gavka about a weasel or a rat or whatever, because it actually rips through with its teeth. On the other hand, you could argue, it says for Noda Behuda, that if it was just a stone, then it's not so bad, not necessarily do we have to be so concerned that it would puncture through the membranes. So only if the skull is broken, then we can start worrying about it. And then the Chassam Sofer further argues with that and says that we're going to see in the Gemara, can you actually, is it valid after a holder attacked it to check it? So then the point would be, in other words, that a holder particularly has curved teeth like that. So therefore, then according to that opinion, you can't check it, because as we're going to see in the Gemara, then the holes are not going to match up necessarily. But other kinds of injuries, then you could do B'difah. So that one is a chiddush by a bird, because we didn't have that by an animal at all. By an animal, if it's bit on the head by a weasel, then it's probably not going to cause the kind of injury in an animal's skull is tougher. It's not going to cause the kind of injury that would even be any problem in the first place. So therefore, we have to mention that specifically by a bird. Next, nikav akurtivan. The next one is, if the kurkivan has a hole, the kurkivan in English is called the gizzard. It's the stomach of a bird. We talked about it earlier in the parak. It's a muscular pouch that has a layer of muscle on the outside, and it has a layer of digestive tissue or whatever on the inside. And the food gets ground up. The food gets ground up in there. It has to be where the bird doesn't have teeth, so it has to undergo a different digestive process than animals do, than domestic animals and wild animals do with their food. So now the point: there's no kurkuban in land animals. So therefore, we have to mention it by itself. We learned earlier in the Masechta. We had an opinion that, again, it has these two layers, the inner yellow layer and the outer muscular layer. We had an opinion that if there's a hole through both of them, even if the holes are not one corresponding to the other, it would still be tshefa, but we said in the end that not. If the holes are not corresponding to one another, then it's kosher, because those two layers don't move relative to one another, and therefore nothing will leak out. The only problem would be that if you have a hole that goes directly through both layers in the same place. Next, nikvu hadakin. The next one would be if the intestines have a hole. Now that's similar to an animal. The reason why we have to mention that one particularly Rashi mentions is because the Mishnah is going to go on to say, the next Mishnah is going to talk about a case where the intestines fell out of the bird, but didn't actually, but are still in their respective positions. Or they don't have a hole and can be put back in their respective positions. Now, that kind of thing conceivably could happen with an animal, but it's highly unlikely. It's much more common to happen with a bird that's smaller, and therefore, so our Mishnah mentions when the intestines have a hole, just for parallelism, just for contrast with the next one, where they don't have a hole, even though they're partially outside the body. Next. Nafla'uv nechmeru b'nei me'er. The next one is if a bird falls into a fire and its internal organs were shriveled or scorched. Not really scorched, were shriveled. Nechmeru means like they mean exactly that, like they become shriveled and wrinkled because of the fire. You have a pasuk in Eicha. Rashi brings Mei Chom Amoru, that the Yumi who wrote Sefer Eicha, who wrote Megillas Eicha about the troubles of the Churban, the disasters of the tragedies of the Churban and the Golos. He says Mei Chom Amoru. He says my innards are like as if they're shriveling from feeling the pain of the Jewish people. So the same thing over here. In other words, we're talking about the bird fell into a fire and this happened. You have a machorkas Rishonim. Is this unique to a bird or not? If we say it's unique to a bird, then that would be why our Mishnah lists it. In other words, the idea would be that Rambam and a number of other Rishonim hold that an animal has thick enough body walls that's not going to happen. Even if it falls into a fire, we don't have much to worry about. The internal organs, the walls of the body will protect it. On the other hand, the Raiva disagrees and says that in fact, we check and we see, as the Gemara is going to tell us, you find differences, you find changes in internal organs, you are going to have to be concerned about that it was damaged by a fire. So the Mishnah is missing it by a bird, because that kind of thing is more common by a bird because it's smaller and because it's more likely for the internal organs to be affected. But in fact, if it were to happen with an animal, he holds it would be tereka as well. So now it falls into a fire and the internal organs shrivel up. So it depends. How do we tell im yirukim, if they turn greenish, sulim, then they're possible. Im adumim, but if it's say their natural red color, shaded, then the animal, then the bird is still talking. Rashi points out, we're talking, for example, the heart, the gizzard, those kinds of things are normally red. So if they remain red, then good. But if they turn green, then it means they were affected, green or yellow or whatever, then it means they were affected by the fire, and therefore the bird is going to be tereka. Next, continues the Mishnah. Dosa, if a person stepped on a bird, or an animal stepped on a bird, or the turf of a coastal, or if he threw it against the wall, so this is the equivalent kind of nefula that we had by an animal, where it fell off a high place and we're concerned that internal organs may have been crushed. Same kind of idea over here. We have to be concerned that the spine may have been broken or other internal organs may have been damaged. Oshiri tzatz to behema, or if an animal crushed it. And in all these cases, the bird is still moving convulsively, but it can't stand up. Because as we learned before, when it comes to nefula, if it's able to stand up, then, and particularly if it's able to walk, or in the case of water birds, we said if it can swim, then it's not, then we know it's fine. But here it's like it's moving and trying to get up, but it can't. So if it remained alive for 24 hours, the shachta, and he shechted it, shader, then it'll be kosher because as we learned before, that any problems will come out within 24 hours. As we're going to learn on Amud Beis, you do have to check the internal organs still, but at least you do have the ability to do that checking. However, as usual, that Amar points out from earlier Rishonim, that nowadays we don't always have the expertise to check that kind of thing, and therefore we would actually have to have the bird be able to walk or swim or whatever in order for it to be kosher, and otherwise, even after 24 hours, we would have to declare it tereka. Okay. So the Gemara starts off talking about this case where a weasel bit the bird on the head. So how do we tell? How do we check whether the whether the membranes of the brain were punctured because of that? Rav or Shmuel and Levi Dami. So Rav and Shmuel and Levi all say, here's how you do. Machnis yad lefnim. You stick your hand or your finger inside the mouth of the bird. And then you check as follows. What you do is you push upward on the palate of the bird on the inside. So therefore you're pressing up against the brain. In the vaxtatroila, if brain tissue comes oozing out of a hole in the top of the head, trefa, then the bird is trefa because then that shows that the membranes were punctured by the weasel biting it. The Rif brings another possibility. What you can also do is press on the outside of the skull and near the area where the weasel bit, and see if they're also, you're putting pressure on the skull and there on the brain, and there also you can see if any brain tissue comes bubbling out. So you do that. And if not, then the bird is kosher because it means there's no puncture that's going to be a problem. Well, the Gemara says, is that necessarily so? We learned earlier in the Perek when we were talking about holes in the membranes of the brain, and we said we had different opinions over there whether the animal is trefa only if both membranes were pierced through. So then we can say that's fine. If no brain tissue comes out by doing this test, then you know that at least one of the membranes is intact, and therefore you're fine. But if you say we had another opinion there on Dachman Hay that said that even if only the upper membrane, the dura mater, is punctured, even if the lower one, the pia mater, is not punctured, then how is this kind of test going to help? We had Rav and Shmuel over there saying that even if it just at the outer membrane was punctured, then everybody it's trefa. Actually, we had two different versions in the Gemara itself. Two different versions of what Rav and Shmuel said over there. In any case, according to the version that only one membrane punctured is already enough to make the bird trefa. But over here, if you do this test of putting pressure on the brain and seeing if anything spurts out, what good is that going to do? If one membrane, fine, one membrane may still be intact. But according to that opinion, one membrane intact is not enough. And the answer is, don't we have to be concerned that maybe only the upper membrane, the outer membrane, was punctured, but not the inner one, and therefore then, and that's why no brain tissue is coming out? The answer is no. No, if the outer membrane, the dura mater, had been punctured by the weasel's bite, then when you do this test of putting pressure on the brain, then the lower one as well, the pia mater, because it's very soft, it's stuck directly to the brain, and then it's very thin, nifka poka, it would in fact burst, and brain tissue would start coming out when you do this test. So therefore, so it is a valid test. If nothing comes out, then it means that everything was fine. The outer membrane is obviously still fine. The inner membrane wouldn't have been damaged if the outer one wasn't, and therefore you're good. But if anything comes out, then so either both of them were punctured by the weasel, and therefore the bird is trefa, or according to that opinion, even if only the outer one was punctured, but doing this kind of pressure will cause the inner one to burst, and brain tissue will still come out. Okay. So that's one opinion. So Rav and Shmuel and Levi are all saying that's a valid way of checking whether the weasel's bite went far enough in to create a problem. On the other hand, Omar Ze'iri, but Ze'iri says no, in particular Holda. There's no valid test that you can do if a weasel bit a bird because its teeth are very thin. So therefore the hole may not allow any brain tissue to leak out by doing this finger test. So the Gemara says, why? The Chishinel Dakas my hobby. What's the difference? Even if they're so fine, the hole is small. So what? A tiny little bit will still leak out. Rabboshia says not just the fact that its teeth are thin. The Chishinel Dakas Vakumers. Its teeth are not only thin but they're curved. So therefore, what happens? It makes a hole. Then the hole itself is at an angle. The hole that it will make in the skull is not necessarily going to line up with the hole that's made in the membranes of the brain. in the meninges of the brain. So therefore, so what's going to happen is you're going to try to do this test, and what's going to happen? No brain tissue is going to come out. Why? Because the hole on the inside doesn't necessarily line up with the hole on the outside, but nevertheless, it will be safer because the fact is you have a hole all the way through. You just won't be able to tell. Therefore, says the idiot, that there's no valid way of testing. Well, the Gemara continues. Ki solik the Nahudah, when Ziri went up to Nahudah, says solik in Gemara terminology usually means going up from Eretz Yisrael, usually means going up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, but here we're saying going to Nahudah, so Rashi says that it means within Bavel itself, he went from the city of Bavel to Nahudah. Maybe Nahudah is actually located on higher ground than Bavel, so therefore Solik going up would be an appropriate name for it. Or maybe because Nahudah was one of the great Mekomos Torah of those times, and therefore going up, therefore going there is an elevation beruchnius. Whatever the case, when Ziri came to Nahudah, Shalach Lahu, he sent back a message to the people of Bavel from where he had come. Now, by the way, Bavel is the name of a country. It's also the name of a city in the country, just like New York is both the state and the city. So when we say he's sent to Bavel, we don't mean to the country of Bavel. He's in the country of Bavel right now. Now, Dar is there. We mean he sent a message to the city of Bavel from where he had come. He writes to them, what I said before, that you can't do a valid bidikra if a weasel bit a bird on the head, then what I said was a mistake, says the Ram. However, you should know, this is what they said in the name of Rav Shimon Lokit. There is a valid way to check, but not like I thought that there's no valid way at all. I guess when he came to Nahudah, then they told him what Rish Lokit had said. So, you can do a hand check of the after a cholder's bite. Namely, you can do the test that we said before with the finger pressing up from the inside of the mouth, the bones of Ashen, or pressing down on the outside of the skull as well, according to the Rif. You can do that. That is a valid test because the fact is, even if the holes don't line up, the pressure is still going to cause something to spurt out if there is in fact a hole. But what Ziri continues, what you can't do is to check it with a nail. What would you do with a nail? You would move a nail gently over the hole and see if the nail catches. So what you would do is, in other words, So you would open up the skull after you shecht this bird. So you know this bird was attacked by a weasel. Now you don't know if the membranes were punctured. So the way to do it, so the possibility of doing it with a nail would be then that after you open up the skull, you would take a nail and run it over the surface of the membrane of the outer meninge and see if it catches. The problem is that a nail, being that it has a sharp edge, it might actually make a hole where there wasn't one before, and then you're going to mistakenly declare the bird traitor. So, according to the Iri, that you can't do. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, after Masmer, Rabbi Yochanan says you could even check using a nail to see if it catches like that. So the Pnei Arya points out that the reason is, because after all, if it does make a hole, it'll be a straight hole. It'll be very different than the hole that's made by the weasel's teeth, and therefore you'll easily be able to tell that this was a new hole that was made now during the checking, during the bedikah, and not the original weasel hole. So Rabbi Yochanan says that would be fine. And the Gemara points out the plot of the Rabbi Hoda Rebbe Nechemi. This machlokus between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish and Ziri quoting Rish Lakish and agreeing with him is actually a machlokus of Tanoim, Rabbi Hoda and Rebbe Nechemi. Chad bodik biyodev, chad bodik b'machta. The same kind of thing. When there was a bird that had been there had been a bird that had been attacked by a cholder, and the question was, and now we need to know whether the membranes of the brain were pierced. So one of them, between Rabbi Yehuda and Nehemiah, would do the hand test, like we said before, pressing up towards the brain or down on the brain, as the case may be. The other one would check it using a needle, which is basically the same as testing using the nail that we said before. So Rabbi Yochanan holds that either one is equally good. Rish Lakish holds that the opinion that says that you can only do the hand test. Tosfos points out, by the way, that it means it's not exactly the same as the machlokas of the machlokas Tanoim, because it comes out the Tanoim are saying That's either one or the other. Rabbi Yochanan is saying either one is good, so fine. His opinion doesn't exactly match up with either of the Tanoim, but the point is we do see that they both hold one or the other of these methods. So the Shlokish will be holding like one of them specifically. So, man de bodik biyada, between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia, the one who would do the hand test, the finger test, omele le man de bodik b'machta, he would say to the one who's using the needle test to see whether the needle catches on the hole, ad motzat l'chat, to see whether there's a hole in the membrane, and if there is, then the needle will catch over there. He says, ad motzat l'chal amamon and show Yisrael. How long are you going to keep on doing this and wasting Jewish money? Because, like we said before, it may accidentally happen that in the course of doing the test, you accidentally puncture the membrane, and then it's going to look like there was a hole there, and when that hole was in fact made after the shita, and it doesn't affect shreifas, and therefore you're causing Jewish money to be wasted unnecessarily. We have, by the way, in this week's parasha, where Rashi makes the point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fasts on the Mon Rosh Yisrael, as we find, for example, when Hashem tells Moshe to speak to the rock, he says, you will give water to the Jewish people and to their animals, because Hashem has Rachmanos on the animals, on the property of the Jewish people as well. Okay, so one opinion, so between these two Tanoim, one of them says you shouldn't be doing the needle test, because then you may accidentally pierce the membrane and cause that Jewish money is going to be wasted. But then the one who did the needle test said to the one who did the hand test, I must have to mark the Yisrael Nevelos. How long are you going to be causing Jewish people to eat Nevelos? Because your test with the finger, where the brain tissue squirts out, is not necessarily always going to be able to tell whether there's a hole. So the Gemara says, what do you mean Nevelos? For shooting. The fact is, this word was shifted, so you can't really call it Nevela. This has a discussion over here that Rabbi Yochanan learns, we learned about this in Zvachin, that actually when you have, when an animal turns out, when a bird turns out to be Tshefa, even though it was shechted, nevertheless it still has the din of Nevela, it still has the din of Tumas Nevela, but okay, the fact is Rabbi Yehuda is talking to Rabbi Nechemia, who doesn't hold that way, and at this point also the Gemara doesn't know which Tana says, which Tana held which position about the finger versus the needle, and therefore we can't say necessarily that it would be a valid thing to call it Nevelas. So Ella, no, what he means is Tshreifas. Fine, he doesn't say Nevelas, he says Tshreifas. There may be a hole in that membrane around the brain, and your test with the finger, he says, is not going to be effective. Because the weasel's teeth are curved, and therefore the holes don't necessarily line up. Okay, so now we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia. We said one said this and the other said that. Which one held which? We can conclude that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who would do the finger test. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, of Shimon Allah's own and Shimon Rabbi Yehuda, bird can lechol the biyad avalei b'masner. When you check whether when a bird has been bitten on the head by a weasel, you can check by hand, but not with a nail or a needle. And he continues nishbara etzem if the skull was broken after shemanik of krum shemayak, even if the membranes of the brain were not punctured, then the bird is today for now. The Gemara is going to ask in a second that wait a minute, then what are we talking about, the finger test or the needle test or anything like that? If anyway, just the skull alone is enough to make the bird today, but we'll get back to that point in a second. But the point is, Rabbi Yehuda in this braisa is clear. Rabbi Shimon Elazar is reporting that Rabbi Yehuda clearly said you can do the finger test, not the needle test, or not the nail test, so therefore tisayim, therefore that we can conclude that Rabbi Yehuda was the one who was checking with his hand and his finger, and Rabbi Nechemia was the one who was using the needle, and then they're saying to each other that your test is not a valid way of doing it. But again, we said Rabbi Yochanan holds actually either one would be equally valid, and we're not concerned about machal and mamon and shalis, you know, because like you said before, as the Pnei Arya points out, that look, you know, you would be able if the needle or the nail did make a hole, you will be able to tell the difference between it and the hole made by the teeth of the weasel. Okay, but now we have to get to in the Braisa itself, or Gofa Kasha. You have a contradiction in the Braisa itself. Amr Birkin Machol the Biyad of Alagamasin. First, you're saying that you can check for the bite of a weasel, according to this braisa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, by hand, but not with a nail. Alma Isle Bidikosa, showing that there is what to check. The skull you see has been punctured by the weasel, but now the question is whether the membranes of the brain were punctured, and then you do this test. But the Hod Tony, Nishmer Etzma, Fishla Nick of Krum Shamaya. But then the Braisa continues that the soul is broken, even if the membranes of the brain are unaffected, then still it's safe. I'm a less lazy pulsa. So then there's nothing to check. Because what are you gonna check? You're gonna do the finger test or the needle test, you're not gonna find any puncture in the membrane. What's the difference? As long as there's a puncture in the skull, then the brood is gonna be safe. So the answer is safe asan la'uf shamayim. The answer is the safer of the Braisa is talking about water beings. So like ducks or whatever. However, in like krum, because it has no membrane around the brain, once the skull itself is punctured, then you have a problem. And one says, what do you mean, ain't like krum salt, but that, what do you mean it doesn't have a membrane? You look, you open up the head of a duck or any other bird like that, you will find membranes there around the brain. Ella, no, what the Gemara means is, the Gemara says, what the Braisa means is, foil or krum rat. The reason is because it does have a membrane, but it's soft. So unlike with land animals and land birds like chicken and like chickens or whatever, where the outer membrane, the dura mater, is in fact tough and leathery, the one on water birds is much softer. So therefore, so in other words, the idea is with a land animal or a land bird, even if the skull is punctured, then as long as the dura mater, the outer membrane of the brain, is unaffected, then you're good. Once that's affected, then like we said before, the inner one is going to easily be affected as well. But here with a water bird, since both membranes of the brain are soft, then therefore so a puncture or a break in the skull is already almost automatically going to affect the outer membrane too and puncture it, and then already you're going to have punctures throughout the whole thing and you have a problem. There is an interesting point that Achronim bring up in this connection. The Pri Chodosh brings it, the Bar Hetiv, the Kaf HaChaim, all bring a situation involving there are certain kinds of birds that have like a depression in their skull with feathers growing out of it. So the question is that considered a hole? Is that considered a hole in the skull that the owner then was saying it would make the bird trace? Or do we say, look, for that type of bird, that's the natural way it grows? There are Achronim who say it's mutter, the Pri is machmer on it. He says maybe the hefs in the middle, but maybe when you have a case of a great loss, let's say for example, a person made a whole banquet, let's say using those kinds of birds, and now there's a question whether we're going to declare them today or not. Then maybe we can be made for. So the Mam lawyers actually mentions that there were different places where they had different minhagim about that. There were in fact places where they held the minhag, we don't eat such birds, even though on the face of it they live long, healthy lives, because of this concern that this depression and the area where the feathers, the area where the holes, where the feathers grow, may be considered holes in the skull of the kind that was saying over here that with water birds would make it today. Okay. So the Gemara continues it in this connection. Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Onan. So Rav Nachman asks Rav Onan, "What's going on over here as far as punctures in the head of a bull?" Mar Omar Shmuel Bodek B'Yonim. You Rebbe told me that Shmuel used to do the finger test to see whether brain tissue leaks out. And then if nothing leaks out, then he said it's kosher. Vahuna Chavrin Amali and Huna, our colleague Rav Huna, also told me Rav Bodek B'Yadir Omaksha, that Rav would also do the same test and also declare it kosher, because like we said at the beginning of the Gemara, Rav and Shmuel and Levi all hold that that's a valid way of testing it. So it's kosher. The problem is, V'hatani Levi, but doesn't Levi teach in a Braisa, Trefes Shemono Chachamim B'Behema, all the Trefes that the Chachamim have listed that we had throughout our Perek that apply to land animals, Kenegdan B'Oif, they also, the corresponding things by birds are also trefa. Again, provided we're talking about that it has the same body parts. Now, for example, Rashi points out, you know, before we had things involving the hemsis and the beis hakoisis, the third and the second stomachs of an animal, a bird doesn't have those parts, so obviously trefas of the hemsis and beis hakoisis are not relevant when it comes to birds. But any ones where they have the same body parts and the same trefas apply, with certain exceptions, yes, there are land furries, but then a braisa continues, a bird has additionally, nishvara etzem achvishle nikav krum, where if the skull is broken, even though the membranes of the brain are not punctured, then nevertheless the bird is safer. So again, then the question is then, so what good does it do to do the finger test that Rav and Shmuel are saying if in any case that all that's going to show is that there's no hole all the way through the membrane and the skull, but still, it seems from this braisa, just a hole in the skull is enough to create a problem. So, and Tosfos points out that there, that Rav Nachman is asking not just from the fact that we said that they said that it's, that they said that it's kosher, but from the fact that they actually did it. Shmuel bodik v'yoda, Rav bodik v'yoda, where they actually did this test showing that they hold, that they held ma'aseh b'poel, that it is valid. And how would that fit with this braisa? So, and for that matter, the question would be on Levi himself. Levi also, together with Rav and Shmuel, said that it would be valid, and here Levi is teaching in his Braisa that a hole in the skull is already makes it Tereza. And Rav Anna, he gives him the same answer, like we just said. That Braisa is talking about a water bird, like a duck. It doesn't have a membrane around the brain, and again, the Gemara says, Emle Krum Sakadai, that's what he means, it has no membrane. It has a membrane, but it's soft, and therefore, it's not going to be able to protect the brain if the skull is punctured.
Okay.
So in this connection, also the Gemara brings another case where this came up. There was a chicken in the household of Rafana, where it had been attacked by a weasel on the head. So he sent it to the Masna, and Ramasna checked it and found he found the skull had been broken or punctured, but the membranes of the brain were unaffected. Whether he did the finger test or whether he did the needle or the nail test, whatever it is, he found that there was nothing wrong with the membranes. But actually, also he declared the chicken kosher. And the same question came up. Amalei, so Rav Chana asks, how could it be kosher? While Tony Levi's shayfus from Monach Chacham Mehema connect them both, same shayfus that applied to an animal equally well applied to a bird. Yes, to Alei and Oif, and then a bird also has an addition. Where if the skull is broken, even if the membranes of the brain are not punctured. So here it was attacked by the weasel and has a puncture in the skull. Why would it be kosher? Amaloi and Rav Nachman gives him the same answer that we already had. That guy says talking about water birds, however, in like krum, because it has no membrane. And again, in like krum sakadai dasa, do you mean that it had no membrane? Ela ema hoyla krum erach, meaning it has a membrane but it's soft. So we've had this a few times now in the Gemara. The point is that different yeshivas, different amiroyim, came up with the same question, and different amiroyim came up with the same answer. And then when Ravina and Ravashi composed the Gemara, then they put all those together, all those cases, all those times when the question was brought up and the answer was given. So far we've talked about two ways that you can check. You can use the finger test, push them up from the inside of the mouth, according to Rashi, or press them down on the outside of the brain, according to the Rif. And you have the needle or nail test, namely you run it along the surface of the outer membrane of the dura mater and see if it catches, showing that there's a hole there. So the Gemara points out there were other methods. You have Shuzbi, Bodik, the Shimsh. Rav Shizvi would check it in the sunlight. So take the membrane and hold it up to the sunlight and see if any light shows through. That would show even a tiny hole. Rav Yema, Bodik Ramaya, Rav Yema would check it using water. So Rashi says there's Rashi explains two possible ways that he could check with water. One is he would remove all of the brain from the skull, leave the membrane intact, so he would, as there's a drain, and the brain merges into the spinal cord, so you have a point over there where you empty out all the brain tissue through that place where it attaches to the spinal cord, and the membranes then still stay intact, and then fill it up with water and see if any water leaks out. The other possibility, Rashi says, is that what he could do is, without taking out the brain tissue, pouring water into the head and see if the water then when it drains out comes out clear. If it comes out clear, then it means the brain has been unaffected and we're fine. If we see that the water is whitish, then it means that brain tissue has gotten mixed into it, and then it means that it means that the bird is terefa. So that was another method. So these are other methods of testing for holes in the meninges. And the Gemara said another one, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, bodik v'gila d'chitza. Rav Acha bar Yaakov would check it using a wheat straw. So the wheat straw would be the same kind of thing as the needle test or the nail test. If it catches, then it means that it means that there's a hole there. And it's safer. The difference is a straw is less likely to accidentally make a hole there where there wasn't one before. The Bahag and the Rif and a number of other Rishonim have a different Girsa that not bodik the Gila de Chitza, that he would check it using a wheat straw, meaning it's running along the surface, but rather Mayitz the Gila de Chitza, he would suck using a wheat straw. So in other words, he would suck and you take the straw and put it on the surface and suck to see whether anything comes out through the hole. And if there was, then we know there's a hole there, and if not, then none. Okay. The Gemara finishes off this discussion about holes in the brain or in the membrane. Amr of Shizdim, Tani Avzi Vigan, are geese, regular geese, Ka'if Shamayim Damyan, they are considered the equivalent of a water bird because they spend a lot of time in there. They spend a lot of time in the water. So even though they're also able to function on land, but they're considered water birds, and therefore we have the same thing that the outer membrane in the brain is soft, and therefore it doesn't protect the brain, and therefore if there's a hole in it, and therefore if there's a hole in the skull, then already the bird is safe, even if we don't find any hole in the actual membrane, because the membrane itself is almost inevitably going to get punctured afterward because the skull is punctured. You actually have a discussion among the poskim, is it that actually the idea is once there's a hole in the skull, inevitably, sooner or later, the membrane is going to get punctured also because it's soft. Or are we talking about that we consider as though the membrane doesn't really exist? And then, therefore, in other words, sort of the skull, according to that way of looking at it, serves the function of that membrane, of the dura mater, and here, when it has a hole, then already it would be today's thing. So we're saying geese over here. We're saying all kinds of geese, and then the post can talk about what are we talking about? All kinds of geese, or what kind are we talking about? Maybe some subspecies of them. One interesting idea that Tiferes Yaffer says that maybe it'll depend whether there's a pond in the area. If there's a pond in the area, the geese are going to spend a lot of time in there. But if it's a place where there's no pond or lake or whatever like that, then the goose is going to still stay on land all the time, and therefore the dura mater will remain hard. Okay. Next. The Mishnah said Nuffle but Ruri had the case where a bird fell into a fire and internal organs of it changed color. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yechon, Mishum Rav Yesi ben Yeshua, Shir Yerukosim Kashir Nikuvasim. When it comes to these internal organs, the amount of them, that if it turns green or yellow and would make it trefa, is equivalent to the amount that would be a problem if there's a hole. Now, internal organs that we're talking about, the heart, the intestines, whatever, the digestive organs, all of those, we said even a tiny hole makes trefa. So after you were crossing the mashu, the same way, if even only a tiny little bit of them turns green or yellow, then it would still be terefa. In fact, actually, the Rashba goes further and points out holes have, if the turning color is even worse in a way than a hole, in the sense a hole, in order to be terefa, as we've learned so far, has to go through the entire thickness of the organ all the way into its cavity. On the other hand, whether it's the heart, whether it's the digestive organs, whatever, on the other hand here, even if there's only an area of greenness on the outside, then nevertheless it's still going to be trefa because it actually has an effect much deeper in. So therefore, in effect, then you have it was affected all the way through, and there, in fact, eventually it's going to get punctured, and therefore it's going to be trefa. So the Gemara says, "Bomine Rabbi Yosef, Breda Rabbi Shimon Levi, Mir Rabbi Shimon Levi." So Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rabbi Shimon Levi, asks his father, Rabbi Shimon Levi, "What about Harika Kovid Keneged Bnei Me'ayim Mahu? What about if the part of the liver that's by the intestines, if that part turns greenish? Now we've learned before." When the liver is missing, so it can still be kosher. It can still be kosher as long as you have a kazayis left in certain places. And here we're talking about the lower end of it, which is by the intestines. So if that part gets affected by the fire, mahu, what would be the din? Is the bird also treif? On the way treif, Rabbi Shimon Levi maybe says it would be treif. So he asks, why? Why should it be any worse than if that part of the liver was removed? And again, as we learned before, as long as you have a kazayis in certain key areas of the liver, then you're fine. And says, Amar Rava, Tivan Shahirika covered Kenegan Bnei Ayin, because once it turned green in the area, we're in the area of the intestines, the Abdua Shanafsul Urban, Nechmu Bnei Ayin, then you can be sure that this bird has necessarily, how did it turn a color like that, is because it previously fell into a fire, and the Bnei Ayin, the intestines, were also affected, or Trefa, and it's going to be Trefa, not because of the effect on the liver per se, but because the fact that the liver was affected shows that the intestines have been affected as well. In fact, the Rashba says that it means even if we have the intestines in front of us and we check them and they seem to be the normal color, nevertheless, we're still going to say that they've been affected and they're going to end up developing a hole. On the other hand, the Rashba brings from Tosfos that maybe not. If we do see that the intestines are fine, then fine. What we say over here, when we say biadua, would mean if we don't have the intestines available, you threw them to the cat or something and it ate them, and now you don't have them available to check, then we would have to assume if the liver has turned partially greenish, even in that area, then it means the Bnei Me'ayim were affected as well. But according to that way of looking at it, if we have the Bnei Me'ayim and we check them and they're fine, then it would in fact be fine. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi Shulam Levi, Rabbi Shulam Levi had a chicken that had fallen into a fire, and now we have this question of whether it's kosher. Shodri, the Tamei, the Rabbi Lazar Akapa Beribi, so he sent it to Rabbi Lazar Akapa Beribi to check it. Beribi means the great one, the great Talmid Chacham of his generation. Amalei said, Rabbi Lazar checked it, and he found that the intestines, Yerukin Havu, that they were green, the Akshara, so he declared it kosher. So he must have, what do you mean, Ranam, it's not Yerukin Psulin. In our Mishnah, we said that if they're green, it's possible. And the answer is, Lo Amri Yerukin Psulin, Elba Kukuban, Belev of a Kobig. Because when we say that if they turn green, it's possible, it's Shrefa, is only by the ones that are normally red. So the gizzard, the heart, the liver, all of those are normally red. So now if they turn a greenish or pale or whatever color, then it means they were affected by the fire and shreifa, as opposed to the intestines are normally greenish or yellowish or whatever. So therefore, so it's no problem. It means that the bird is still kosher because it wasn't affected. So in fact, Achronim asked, so what was Rabbi Shulam Levi thinking? He doesn't know the normal color. He doesn't know the normal color of the intestines. When we said that if they're red, it's kosher. So the Ran points out, it means even if now they're redder than normal, the ones that we just mentioned, the heart, the liver, and the gizzard, those are a certain shade of red normally. Now if they turn more red, then still we can say the bird is kosher. So by the same token over here, if the intestines are normally a greenish or yellowish color, if now they're more, it's more intense color, then it would still be kosher. But Rabbi Shulam maybe didn't know that. The fact is it's a different color than normal, so he thought that it would be trefa, and Rabbi Lazar Kapra says that no, any greenish or yellowish color is fine when it comes to those parts. A point of that, Leib Aryeh points out another way of looking at it again is the word Yorek itself, taka, means either green or yellow. So therefore, what it was is here they were yellow. So Rabbi Shulam Levi thought that that's no good. But the Rabbi Lazar Akapra says it doesn't matter whether they're green or whether they're yellow. Either way, it's kosher. So the Gemara continues. Similarly, which internal organs are we talking about? If they turn green or yellow, then the bird would be trefa. The kukavon, the laser of covet, with the gizzard, the heart, and the liver, which are normally red, and now they turn a different color. Tosfos points out that we're not mentioning the lungs over here. Now we're going to learn tomorrow, Bas Hashem, that the lungs of a bird are not necessarily implicated in halachas of treifas. Because they're protected much more by the ribs. We'll talk about tomorrow, Bas Hashem, that actually with a bird, the lungs don't expand and contract like they do in an animal. Instead, the way that a bird breathes, you actually have the lungs are connected to air sacs inside the ribs and inside some of the other body parts over there. So if those are dislocated or broken or whatever, then you have a problem. But the lung itself is not the lung itself is just the air just passes through it, and therefore even if it changes color because of a fire, then it's not necessarily going to be a problem. Similarly, the Gemara tells a similar case. Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef Havalei Ahu Tana Gerlata. Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef had a chicken that had fallen into the fire. Shodril Chamedi Rabba Bohu, so he sent it to Rabba Bohu. But Amalei, and Rabba Bohu says, Adumin Havu, the internal organs in it are red, the torfa, and therefore he said it's Tzrefa. So what do you mean? Adumin Kshavim, the Mishnah had said that if they're red, then it's good. Amalei, so he says, when we say Adumin, Shahu Riku. On the other hand, if you have one, so it means that if red ones turn yellow, then it's a problem. Yerukin shehadimu, and also by the same token, ones that are supposed to be green that turn red, either way treif. Lo amra adumin kshedim. When the Mishnah says if they're red, then it's kosher. Means ela b'leiv the kukum and kavod is only the heart, the gizzard, and the liver, which are normally red. But here the intestines, which normally are a greenish color, instead they turn red. Therefore, that demonstrates that it was affected by the fire, and therefore that's also treif. So in short, in other words, when we said in the Mishnah that Yerukin Psulim Adumin Kshedim, it's not a blanket statement. It means the ones that are normally greenish, if they stay greenish, then we're fine. But if they turn the ones that are normally red, if they stay red, they're good. If they turn green, then no good. And with the ones that are normally green, it's the other way around. So in this connection, the Gemara continues. Suppose you have internal organs that are supposed to be red, but instead they turn green because of the fire. The shokan, but then you cook them a little bit. You put them in a little boiling water. Because you've had dimu, and they turn red again, kshedin, then it means they're kosher. My time a kutra, I overhu, because then it means why were they affected? It's just that the smoke got into them. So in other words, it's not that they didn't really change. It's just the bird inhaled some smoke, and therefore that caused these things to change colors. Now now you put them in boiling water for a short bit, then it causes them to regain their original color. So therefore they're fine. Says, in that case, then we can say also the other way around. Suppose you have a bird that has internal organs that are red. They didn't turn green. They still keep their red color, the shokan, but now you put them in boiling water for a bit, and they turn pale, trefa, or green, trefa, then the bird is going to be trefa. My time, because now it means that now their shame has been revealed. In other words, what would have happened the other way around? They were, in fact, damaged by the fire. It didn't come out to begin with. They look still superficially the right color. But now you put them in a little boiling water and they turn a different color. Then that shows that all along they had in fact been affected by the fire and just it didn't come out until now. There are a number of different gusos and explanations among the Rishonim about whether this applies to all these things, the ones that are supposed to be red and the ones that are supposed to be green. So in other words, the goose that we have in front of us is both of them are talking about the ones that are normally red, and we're saying that the little cooking over there in boiling water will tell us what the truth is, whether they stay the same color, whether they go back to their original proper color, or whether they turn the opposite color. The Rif and the Rosh explain that, the Gusa of the Rif and the Rosh is that Rav Shmuel Bachia had said that it was talking specifically about the ones that are green and they became red and then again you cook them and they became green again, then they're kosher, and I'm not going to say the vice versa. The same thing would be true of the red ones that stay red that are red now, but afterwards you cook them and then turn green. And then you have the Ramban and the Rashba have a third gear, so they always go according to what was accomplished by the fire. The cooking doesn't do afterwards. The cooking doesn't change anything. Doesn't change anything afterwards. According to them, and then we have to understand what the Gemara even mentions the cooking. They don't even have the cooking in the Girsa. And in that case, according to them, we have when the Gemara continues with Rav Ashi saying something about the cooking. According to them, we would have to understand the Rashba wonders that then what would be the point of that? And he says maybe that Girsa doesn't belong. The majority of the postgame, though, do hold of this business about the cooking, meaning, in other words, that if you took the internal organ and put it in boiling water and it changed to the opposite color, then it means the bird is trefa. So, Now, does that mean every time that happens, we automatically assume that? Or is it only if we know that this particular bird fell into a file? So in fact, that Amban points out that you don't have to assume without knowing that that it fell into a fire. But the other way of looking at it that somebody shouldn't learn is that no, if it turns color, then we know it must have fallen into a fire and we just didn't know about it. So Rabashi says, if you're telling me that cooking a little bit in boiling water is able to change the color and may demonstrate that the bird is actually chafer, because it means that it really was affected by the fire and it just didn't come out until now. So Rabashi says, therefore it comes out that if a bird fell into fire, then we should only eat it after we cook it. We shouldn't be allowed to roast it or prepare it any other way, because then how do we know that maybe there is a problem? However, the Gemara says, "Valoihi, that's not so. Achzuki reyus alay machzakinen." We do not have to assume a problem without the. We do not have to assume a problem without there being any particular reason to treat. So in other words, Rav explains, Rav Ashi would say that, look, he fell into a fire, so now already you have to check with this cooking, but the Gemara is saying you don't even have to. If you don't have any particular, if you open up the bird and you don't find anything wrong with the internal organs, you're not actually obligated to then go and cook them to see whether they change color. If you cook them and they change color, then you have a problem, then it's straight. But otherwise, we don't have to worry about that. We said in the Mishnah, dose of the turf of a chazal. We said that if a person stepped on a bird or threw it against the wall, then we said that if he shefted after mess after 24 hours, then it's kosher. But it's not just enough that. Amar Abulazar ben Sigmas, Mishum Abulazar ben Yana, Achasu v'Achasu, Tzucha b'Dikah. Either way, whether it was stepped on or thrown at a wall or crushed by an animal or whatever, even after mess Tzucha b'Dikah, you would still need to check to make sure nothing has been. Check that nothing has been broken, that the spine or the spinal cord hasn't been damaged, or the other internal organs, etc. The Mephoshim points out that the Ramban points out, you know, when it comes to an animal, we talk about it falling off a roof. When we talk about a bird, we're talking about being crushed underfoot or thrown against a wall. It would apply across the board as well. The difference is a bird doesn't usually fall because it can fly. We had the case a few days ago where it gets trapped on a glue board and then it falls down, being unable to fly. But normally with a bird, you're not going to talk about it falling. You're going to talk about it. You're going to talk about it being stepped on or whatever. As opposed to an animal, you usually wouldn't be able to step on it. So therefore, we're talking about it falling off a roof or off a high place. But the same thing would apply. The same thing would apply in either case.
So,